And you're listening to KTOO. I'm Yvonne Crumery. Thank you for tuning in. Congress passed the American Relief Act of 2025 late last month. And tucked inside it is millions of dollars directed to study possible ways to mitigate Juneau's glacial outburst floods in the long term. City Manager Katie Kester says securing the funding is a big relief.
I am incredibly excited and thankful. You know, the community has been really vocal about not wanting to lose sight of a long-term solution, and this allows us to just get started as soon as possible on a long-term solution.
The U.S. Army Corps of Engineers will lead the study to examine potential engineering solutions for mitigation and prevention. This fall, Kester, Mayor Beth Weldon, and representatives from the Central Council of the Tlingit and Haida Indian Tribes of Alaska travel to Washington, D.C. to advocate for federal money and support for the study. The entire study is projected to cost about $6 million. In September, the Juneau Assembly committed $3 million towards it. Kester says this new bill promises some funding for the investigation, but it's not clear exactly how much money is coming yet. It could take years to complete and even longer to implement a long-term solution. In the short term, the city proposed a multi-phase plan to install military-grade HESCO flood barriers along key sections of the Mendenhall River before the next flood hits this summer.
The investigation study through the Corps is going to be a much longer process than the HESCO barriers that are hopefully going to be installed this summer. The short-term solution is designed to buy us time while we work on the long-term solution.
The first phase of the barrier project is estimated to cost nearly $8 million to install. The city would provide some funding to cover the cost using Juneau taxpayer dollars, but the rest would be split among nearly 500 homeowners in flood-prone neighborhoods through the creation of a local improvement district, or LID. The city has held several public meetings on the proposed plan. The next one is tomorrow night at Thunder Mountain Middle School. The Juneau Police Department has released the name of the officer who shot and killed a Juneau resident last week on Christmas Day. According to a news release shared by police this afternoon, Officer Jonah Hennings Booth fired the fatal shot. Officers Anthony Bates and Jeff Davis were also present during the incident, but did not fire their weapons. The person killed was identified by police last week as 30-year-old Ashley Ray Johnson. According to family and people who knew them, they went by the name Ray and used multiple gender pronouns. The fatal shooting happened early Christmas morning in the parking lot of the Mendenhall Valley Breeze Inn convenience store. According to the police, Hennings Booth and the two other officers responded to the location after receiving a call that Johnson was allegedly screaming and threatening people while wielding a hatchet. Police later described it as a, quote, axe-like blade on one side with a hammerhead on the other. Police say Johnston did not comply with officers when they ordered them to put down the weapon. Police say they continued to advance toward the officers even after officers tased them. Hennings Booth then shot Johnston. Hennings Booth has worked for JPD for close to 6 years. Both Bates and Davis have less than 2 years of experience in law enforcement. All three are patrol officers and will all be back on duty by tomorrow. Johnston was pronounced dead at the scene. According to family and friends, Johnston had been unhoused through most of their life. Their death is the second shooting fatality involving police in Juneau within a year. In July, police shot and killed 35-year-old Stephen Kissack downtown. And Ray Johnston's family and members of the community reflected on the loss. Ray Johnson was identified as a woman in early reports of the shooting, but family and friends say Johnston was gender fluid and used multiple pronouns. That's reflected in how people talk about them in this story. Johnston's brother, Nathaniel Hensley Williams, sits on the edge of a garden bed outside of the Glory Hall, an organization that provides shelter space for unhoused people in Juneau. He said he started getting condolence messages after the shooting, even before the police confirmed Johnston's identity.
Everybody knew her, literally. She's been roaming the streets since she was 12, so it's 18 years, so everybody knew her.
His family is Tlingit, from the Raven Moiety, and he pointed to the large black birds gathered across the street.
The ravens have been upset, too.
But for him, the grief has been coming in waves.
It hasn't fully hit. Realization hasn't fully set in.
Hensley Williams says Johnson cared for the unhoused community in Juneau and would defend and support those who were having a bad time.
She's like me. She never knew when to take off the cape and mask.
Johnston's mother, Angel Nursetimer, agrees. She says Johnston was funny and was good at making people smile.
He was one that could uplift a lot of people, even sometimes in their darkest hour. She was one for noticing that people might need a quick little chuckle.
Hensley Williams suggests that Johnson might have known what the consequences could be when they advanced on armed police officers with a weapon on Christmas morning. A nurse timer said Johnson had told friends they dreamed about being shot by police in the weeks leading up to the event. According to the Juneau Police, officers responded to a call that Johnston was threatening people while holding a hatchet near the Breeze Inn convenience store. They told Johnston to put down the weapon. Johnson moved toward the officers. They used a taser, non-lethal force, which they say was ineffective. Then an officer shot and killed Johnston. Juneau mental health advocate Christina Love met Johnston while she was doing crisis intervention work and came to know them over the years. She saw them in moments of both hope and struggle. Love said she thought they wanted to get better.
They were deeply interested in recovery and mental health and healing.
Love is a specialist in advocacy for people who have experienced domestic violence, are involved with the justice system, or who struggle with addiction. She also has personal experience with generational trauma among Indigenous people.
People have said, you know, this is a person that had caused a lot of harm. And there is no denying that, but I also know that it came from a place of so much need, like unmet needs, untreated medical, untreated mental health.
Johnston died in the second fatal police shooting in Juneau in 2024. In July, 35-year-old Stephen Kissack was also shot and killed by police during an altercation. Kissack had lived on the streets of Juneau for several years. After an investigation by the Alaska Bureau of Investigation, the state ruled that the use of force against Kissack was justified. But members of the Juneau community, like Love, say the death raised questions about how people who live outside and who struggle with mental health issues are treated in crises. She says more needs to be done to prevent mental health emergencies among Alaska Native people and the unhoused from ending this way.
And if we want changes, then I think that we have to... have to ask different questions and have to demand evidence of that. So that means that we are asking for cultural responsiveness. We're asking for them to be well-versed in trauma, for well-versed in mental health and substance use.
There's a script for what police do if a person threatens them with a weapon. But Love says that script considers the dangers of one moment and not the whole life of that person or the lifetimes before.
Because if they don't know about the village that was burned here, you know, or why Native people, the majority of us don't own land, and why so many of us are struggling with substance use and mental health issues, then they're going to think it's an us problem rather than it being like a systemic problem or, you know, like that. That's that bias. And that all of that is present when they're holding a gun and there's a Native woman presenting a mental health crisis in front of them. Like, all of those things are present there.
The Alaska Bureau of Investigation will investigate, and the Office of Special Prosecutions will determine whether the shooting was legally justified. In accordance with JPD policy, the officers involved were placed on administrative leave following the shooting. Back at the Garden, Hensley Williams says he thinks Johnston is still looking out for their community.
She's still there. She's still watching. She's still there if needed. And will be until her mission's done.
A friend comes outside and gives him a hug, and they watch the sunlight on the mountains. In Juneau, I'm Yvonne Crumery. And the Sitka Assembly is on notice that there's another difficult year ahead for local schools. When the Sitka Assembly met on Monday, School Board President Phil Burdick said even if the legislature increased the base student allocation, the district would be in a tough spot.
Right now, it looks like even if the legislature comes through with a $680 increase to the base student allocation, we're still looking at about a $2 million deficit for the Sitka School District.
680 is the number most often cited by school officials, since that was the permanent increase to the BSA the legislature approved last year. The governor, however, vetoed the bill. He later allowed a one-time increase of $680 to pass. The new session of the legislature opens on January 21st with bipartisan majorities in both the House and Senate. Former Sitka teacher Rebecca Himshute will coordinate the House Education Committee, which could come up with an entirely new funding proposal for Alaska schools. Burdick told the Osaka Assembly that advocacy would be as important this year as last year, but the board would be doing community outreach a bit differently. He said they plan to hold listening sessions at each school, presenting the financial situation to parents and getting feedback.
So we're crafting some questions that will help guide those listening sessions. Some of them are around what, when you think about your student and their education at insert school, what's the most important thing for your family? How many students is too many in a classroom? What do you want from your graduates in terms of skills and habits of mind? And how can we graduate the students that we need for the workforce, that we need for the city to continue to be a strong place to live for everybody?
Burdick said the board would submit a more complete view of its budget at a joint work session with the Assembly on January 16th. And the Ketchikan Indian community announced today that it's opened a new emergency warming shelter for unhoused tribal citizens. The shelter is located on Tongass Avenue in the former building of the Galley Restaurant and will be open overnight for up to 12 adults who complete an intake process. KIC says it will be focused on helping members find permanent housing, treatment, and employment. The shelter is low barrier, so sobriety is not a requirement, but substances are not allowed inside. The temporary shelter will be open through the end of March. You're listening to KTOO. For more stories, go to ktoo.org.